Welcome to episode 526 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard. No Richard tonight. He's off playing the role of nurse, so I cannot wait to hear how that went next week. Now, this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. We do have a little bit of listener feedback, not quite as much as I had hoped we would have after, you know, the homework assignments that I gave you all last week, but that's all right. So these were both sent into our email inbox at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. First one is from Brian. He is replying back to us talking about the cost of YouTube TV going up to $65 a month. He says, while I'm disappointed with the price increase in streaming providers this week, I refuse to switch back to cable until they can be honest with their pricing. Spectrum tried to sell me an advertised $34.99 bare bones TV package that had an additional $9.27 in hidden fees. Frankly, Brian, I'm a little bit surprised that it was only $9 in hidden fees. I fully expected this to be at least $15. When you said the cost of the advertised price. I'm also 100% positive that after the introductory period, it would have doubled in price or more. So that's just the games these cable providers are playing with customers nowadays. We also heard from longtime listener Jose. He was responding to the question that I asked of, should I listen to the Hamilton soundtrack prior to watching the musical when it released last Friday, July 3rd on Disney Plus? And I'm not going to read his whole message because it's pretty long, but he kind of walked me through the way he and his sister both approached seeing the musical live. And as he was there, as I was reading the message from him, I came to the same conclusion that he eventually got to in his email. So basically what he was saying, what his advice was, and I guess this is for anybody who still hasn't watched it, which seems like it's got to be a pretty small group of people. But he said, basically, just go and watch it. Don't listen to the soundtrack first. Then nothing will be spoiled for you. You'll probably be able to understand most of it. And if you've ever listened to hip hop, especially, you're not going to have a hard time understanding the songs. Even if you do struggle a little bit, it's on Disney Plus. Watch it once, listen to the soundtrack a few times so that you can catch anything that you might have missed while watching it the first time, and then rewatch it as many times as you want. You're not paying hundreds of dollars to see it once live. You're paying $8 a month to watch it as often as you want. So that is the direction that I ended up going with. I didn't listen to the soundtrack first. I just went in and watched it Friday night. And yeah, we've been listening to the soundtrack a lot since then. So I'm going to save all of my impressions and stuff for it for next week when Richard is here. But I will say I liked it a lot. So that's it for the listener feedback and for my quick Hamilton takes until next week. So instead, let's get into the show. First up, and I really feel like this is actually the biggest news story of the week, which might be a little surprising when it's about a new video codec. And you're like, seriously, codecs? That's the most exciting thing? I think this actually is pretty exciting. So if you've paid much attention to video codecs over the last decade, maybe you've heard the phrases H.264 and H.265. Those are the main video codecs that are used for the vast majority of video compression that you see out in the world. H.264 was really big for a while. It got replaced eventually by H.265, and that's in use a ton, especially in the higher resolution videos that you're watching. If you're watching anything in 4K, it's almost definitely using H.265. Well, the Fraunhofer, and I'm guessing that's how you pronounce it, they're a German organization. They're the ones responsible for this new codec and those previous ones. They're also the ones who invented the MP3 codec. So they kind of know what they're doing when it comes to video and audio compression technologies. So they've been working since 2015 on what the next version would look like and the H.266 codec, what it would look like. And it's done. They've released it out to the world. It is ready to be used. And it's awesome. If you were to take a 90-minute 4K video that you encoded using H.265, it would be about 10 gigs. That's pretty small. That's really small, really. And it would look really good. If you took that same 90-minute video and used H.266, this brand new codec, it would be about 5 gigs. And it would still look the same. It'd have the exact same visual quality as the H.265 version. So why do we care about the size of these videos? Well, we care because of streaming video. So what this means is that Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime and all of these services that are doing 4K video streaming across the internet will now be able to use half the bandwidth that they're currently using to send you those videos. And you think, all right, who cares? Like my internet can handle it the way it currently is. Why do I need this? Well, the world needs this. We found out in March, you know, when the COVID-19 pandemic hit and everyone was suddenly stuck at home with nothing better to do than stream Netflix all day. Like it, I'm not going to go so far as to say it brought the internet to its knees, but it put a hurting on it for sure. It had such a large impact that YouTube and Netflix and some of those really, really large video providers all started cutting back the default bitrate that they were sending out to people just to help preserve some bandwidth for everything else going on. Important things like people working, children trying to do remote school. So it's going to help with reducing bandwidth if they use it for nothing else. But another thing that you should be excited about is that it means, okay, so your internet is fine now with the bitrate that you're getting. Well, you could do twice, maybe not twice, but you could definitely do higher quality 4K streams at the same bitrate that you're receiving it now. So if you're like, oh, I don't like 4K video streaming, I don't see the point, it doesn't look anywhere near as good as an Ultra HD Blu-ray, you're right. It doesn't look as good as a Blu-ray. It still looks pretty good in most cases, but you could make it look even better using the same bitrate and the same bandwidth that we're using now. And that's great news for you people who just need to have the absolute best looking video quality that you can get. If you're worried that, you know, maybe you aren't using 4K, so why do you even care yet? Well, this isn't just for 4K. This will go all the way down to 480p and it'll go higher. You know, they haven't been working for 5 years to produce a video codec that's only good for the next couple of years. 8K is on the way and H.266 supports 8K, and it sounds like it'll even support higher resolutions, but 8K, that is 4 times the pixels of 4K. So that's already a massive jump in video quality and resolution and depth of picture that you're going to get out of that. And this will support it. So these are the types of advancements we need to be getting better video streamed to us over the internet. So I think this is really exciting news. I think that this is going to be a really huge deal for the future of us watching video at home. Now, I do have to say the future, because all of this stuff really only works well when there are processors specifically designed for decoding these. You know, your phone right now or your tablets can give you hours and hours and hours of battery life watching video because it has a special part of the processor that's just built to do that. And so it can do it really, really efficiently. None of that exists yet. You know, the spec just got released basically. So now all of the hardware manufacturers are going to begin building their processors to natively support this so that it doesn't have to be done through software decoding and things like that, which are always slower. So you're probably not going to be getting this on any device that's released this year, but next year, I think the floodgates are going to open on this, and you're going to see it on the top tier phones. You're probably going to see it on especially the higher end TVs, but maybe most TVs will have H.266 built in. I'm kind of curious what this means for the next gen video game consoles. It's probably bad timing there. You know, you might be listening to the show and planning to go out and spend $400 or $500, who knows, maybe $600 on an Xbox Series X or a PlayStation 5. And chances are those devices, like I think there's basically no chance that those devices that'll be launching this year are going to have built in H.266 decoding. Now, those are powerful enough devices that they could do it in software, probably, but it's just not going to be as efficient as hardware that's built for it. So if you're watching 4K video, one of the places you might be watching it is Amazon Prime Video. And they've announced something new, well, new to them, not really new to basically any other major streaming service available. And that's the ability to have multiple user profiles per account. I know what you're thinking. What? They didn't already have this? That's kind of what I was thinking too. But no, they didn't have this. Everybody shared one account. Now, with Amazon Prime, basically across the world, because they did launch this in India, I believe, now everywhere, you're going to have the ability to have up to 6 profiles per Amazon account. You're going to have kids' profiles too. And if you're already doing the Amazon Family Wallet, I think is what it's called, where you can have multiple accounts, you know, sub accounts basically for each person in your family tied up into this, it'll automatically make a profile for everybody who's set up like that for you, which is cool. It helps you get started with this a little bit faster. It also means that if you have children's accounts set up, that you're going to get special kid profiles inside of Amazon Prime Video. Also, kid profiles can't by default make purchases. You would have to enter a password or a PIN to do that, which is great. You don't want to worry about your four-year-old accidentally, well, wouldn't be an accident for them. Maybe it would be, you know, buying, you know, 3 straight seasons of Bubble Guppies or something like that. So a little bit of protection there on the kids' accounts. And of course, a much filtered down selection of what they can watch if you set up any of those profiles as kids' specific profiles. Right now, you can manage all of this profile information on Android, iOS, Fire TV, Fire tablets, of course, the Amazon website, and then some other devices. The article that we're going to link to mentions PlayStation 4, and it just says select other devices. I'm sure eventually it'll be available anywhere that you can currently watch Amazon Prime Video. So look for that soon. You might want to log into your Amazon account now to start setting this up, because everybody gets their own watch list. So if you're sick of seeing your kids' stuff or maybe your partner's shows that you just don't care about, all of that can go in everybody's own separate watch list, and it'll keep track of progress in shows and throughout series individually. So maybe you and your partner are both watching a series, but you don't have a lot of time to sit down on the couch and watch together, but you like to be able to talk about it over dinner or something. You can have your own separate profile so that you're not messing up where the other person is in the show or within the particular seasons and series. So there you go. Amazon Prime profiles, finally, about 5 years after everybody else already did this. Our big news last week, and also mentioned at the top of the show, from a piece of listener feedback from Brian, was that YouTube TV raised their prices to $65 a month pretty much right away. Fubo TV did the same thing. I think there might have been another one also, but there's one company that didn't, and that's Sling TV. literally the day after the YouTube TV announcement, Sling TV basically emailed their entire email list to say, hey, we're not doing that. We're not raising your prices. And they actually got pretty specific about it because they could have just said, we're not raising your prices right now, and then waited a month or 2 months, maybe 3 months, and raised them then. You know, maybe if they were being generous, they could have waited until we were past this pandemic and then raised them. That's not what they did. Instead, they said, our prices are going to stay the same until at least August of 2021. So more than a year out from now, you'll be paying the same price that you can pay today for Sling TV. And so what does that cost you? Well, they basically break it down into two separate, well, kind of three separate packages. So there's Sling Orange, which is, it's kind of more focused towards the ABC / Disney / ESPN packages. And then there's Sling Blue, which is more the Fox, NBC sort of channels and stuff like that. Both of those can be purchased separately for $30. You know, maybe you only care about ESPN and Disney, then you sign up for Orange and you give them $30 a month. Or you can combine both of them and pay $45 a month. And so those are the prices that are sticking around until at least August of 2021. All right, so on to some gaming news. Normally, this section tends to be dominated with Xbox news, and there's going to be some of that. But I think the bigger story this week, really the biggest story in gaming, in my opinion, is the announced price for a basketball game. I know what you're thinking, like, really? The price of a basketball game? Who cares? We know what video games cost. Well, that might be changing. So NBA 2K21 was officially announced this last week and went on pre-order. Well, you can't do a pre-order without knowing the price. The game is launching on all of the current gen platforms on September 5th for all of the normal, you know, for the normal price that you expect, $59.99. That's what a video game costs right now. That's what a major video game costs. Not a lot of indie games and stuff like that. But what are they going to do when the Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 launch later this fall at some undetermined date? Well, they're going to have a separate version of the game. And that's not unheard of, but it's going to have a different price. If you buy it on your PlayStation 4 or your Xbox One, it's going to cost you $59.99. If you want it on your next-gen console, you want to play it on your PlayStation 5 or your Series X, $69.99. So $10 more to get the next-gen version of the game. They will not be following the suit of a lot of other major publishers who are releasing games on current-gen systems this year and are saying, we're going to give you a free upgrade to the next-gen version whenever that comes out. They're not doing that. If you buy it on September 4th for $60, that's just the version you get. And it's going to be a different version. The next-gen version will have more or better features, obviously better graphics and things like that. If you want to be able to play it on both and only pay once, you can. You have to buy what's essentially the Ultimate Edition. It's called the Mamba Forever Edition, Mamba being a reference to the late Kobe Bryant, of course. That edition is going to set you back $99.99. So if you give them $100, if you give them $100, then you can play it at its full potential on both generations. That part of this feels kind of gross. I don't like it. I really don't like that that's tied to this special edition of the game that's partially meant to honor Kobe Bryant. It just feels kind of dirty. But I do understand what they're doing here. And I do wonder, is this just what 2K is doing? Or is this what all games are going to cost going forward? Games have been retailing at launch for $59.99 since the Xbox 360 launched in 2005. So all the way through the Xbox 360 generation, all the way through this Xbox One generation, games have cost $60. Doesn't it seem a little weird that it's been 15 years and the price hasn't changed? It's not like the amount of work that these developers put into these games has decreased or even stayed the same. We're getting a new generation of games here. I think, and this probably isn't going to be a popular opinion, but I think it's kind of about time for the cost of these games to go up. And I think there would actually be some benefits to the consumers if this happens. Because right now, what pretty much every video game company is doing, with, you know, with the exception of some of those, the indies out there, but all of the major publishing and development studios are putting out $60 game, but then they're putting out, you know, one or two or three extra premium editions to try and recoup more of the development funds. That way, they're building in all of these extra, you know, mechanics that entice you to buy more DLC, like whether that's just add-on packs, but it could just be like paying for skins or buying loot boxes. You know, there's so many ways the game companies are now trying to do extra monetization on their games. And we're all pretty sick of that, right? We're pretty sick of the fact that that ends up driving gameplay in a lot of these games. We don't want, I don't want more of that. And I don't think that just raising the price by 10 bucks is going to eliminate that, but it could reduce it because it does help these game companies who are spending millions of dollars producing these games to have a better chance at making their money back, making a profit. And when they make a profit, when they make their money back and make a profit, that enables them to make more games that we want to play. It also, if you just want to get, you know, down to the human aspect of this, it means that the developers are getting paid. The QA people are getting paid. The voiceover talent is getting paid. Anybody remember 2 years ago when there was the huge strike from all the voiceover talent? Like, you want to go through that again? I don't. All of these people are talented individuals who work their butts off to give us these games. And just like any profession, they deserve to get paid for it. So I think 15 years of paying the same price for a video game, I think it's okay to see it go up a little bit right now. Okay, so what about those next-gen games? Let's put aside the price now. Let's talk about when we're going to start seeing more of them. Well, Microsoft announced this week that they are finally giving us a date for when we're going to see their first-party games. So July 24th at noon Eastern, you know, if you're in a different time zone, you can probably do the conversion from Eastern pretty well by now. That's when they're going to be showcasing lots of first party games. They haven't given us a number. They haven't told us the games, of course, but you can make some pretty good guesses. We know we're going to see Halo Infinite, and that'll probably be the biggest one. There's a good chance we're going to see more of Hellblade 2, since we already saw some of it back at the Video Game Awards in December. You have to assume that there's going to be a new Forza game released this fall with the new console. It's probably going to be Forza Motorsport, not Horizon. Pretty sure we're going to see that. And of course, there's all of the rumors and all of the little things that keep coming out that point to the release of Fable 4, you know, brand new Fable game, first time in, man, more than a decade, I think, since Fable 3, and potentially a new Perfect Dark game. Those are games that had a, you know, kind of a cult following. I never played them. I should probably check one out. They're on Game Pass, so certainly could. But there's going to be a lot. Like, it's going to be way more than these four games. We know that, you know, we already know of some first party games that are coming out later this fall, even just for Xbox One. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if we see 10 to 15 games during the showcase. What's important to keep in mind is our expectations. Microsoft did that huge event back in May, and they talked over and over again going into it about how much gameplay you're going to see, and then didn't end up seeing that much gameplay. And the internet was pretty mad about it, justifiably so. They're not going out of their way to talk about how much gameplay we're going to see during the showcase. I think that says two things. One, and probably most importantly, they learned their lesson. That's the really important part. I mean, that's really been what Microsoft has been doing for the past 7 years, since all of the blunders of the Xbox One launch. They've been learning their lessons and making better choices. Gosh, I feel like I'm talking to my children. But so I think part of it is just they don't want to set expectations too high or set them in a direction that they won't actually be going. But I do think there is going to be a fair amount of gameplay because a lot of these games are coming soon. You know, a lot of these games will be coming out within the next 6 months, but not all of them. You know, if they do announce a new Fable game, Fable 4, it's probably not releasing this fall. And if it's not releasing this fall, I don't think we need to see gameplay. That's okay. It's okay to not see gameplay for those games as long as Microsoft doesn't set the expectation that we're going to, right? Just don't make us feel lied to. That's really what we're going for here. You don't have to show gameplay for everything, and we can still be pretty excited about that. Just don't make us think that we're going to see gameplay on everything going into that event. So I'm excited. I will absolutely be watching that day while eating my lunch for sure. And then we will, of course, be talking about it in depth on the following episode of Entertainment 2.0. Now, another thing that is going on that same week is the Summer Game Fest. And this is being put on with Microsoft along with Jeff Keighley. And the idea is, you know, if you were going to E3 or if you were going to PAX or to Gamescom, you know, all of these big summer events that have all been canceled for this year, one of the main reasons you would be going to those events is to get your hands on these games. That's the cool part of these shows. You get to demo the games. Well, you can't do that right now. But everybody still wants people to experience their games ahead of time, and they want the feedback on those games. So what they're doing is they're going to do a demo fest, basically. So for the week of July 21st through July 27th, you're going to be able to download demos of more than 60 games. And most of these demos are going to be brand new demos that you've never played. These aren't going to be the same types of demos that you're probably already downloading on your Xbox, though. You have to remember, this is the equivalent to playing a game at E3 or at Gamescom. And when you play a game at one of those events, it is a very small chunk because people can't just stand there and play a game for 2.5 hours when they're on the show floor. The lines are already ridiculous. They would be crazy if they let you do that. So expect these to be pretty small. You should also expect them to not be super polished. They're going to try and polish them as much as they can. It's a small demo intended for a conference type of audience. So don't go in there expecting that this is basically final gameplay, like you're used to getting, you know, a pretty similar type of experience when you're downloading demos from your Xbox right now. Lastly on this, this is huge for the developers, especially those indie developers. So when you play these games, let the developers know what you think about the game. Find them on social media and tell them what you liked, what you didn't like, at least for the games that you care about, the games that you want to see released as high quality games. Reach out to those developers. They want to hear what it is that you liked and what you didn't like about their game so that they can make it even better for you. Our last gaming story here for you is from a partnership between Microsoft and I believe it's pronounced 8-bit do. That's how I've always pronounced it. I've heard people call it 8-bit do. It's 8-bit-do. Do to me is do, so I say 8-bit do. They're working on a new Bluetooth controller because that's basically what this company does. They make really high quality, usually Bluetooth controllers. And they've made a name for themselves making controllers, especially the ones that look like Super Nintendo controllers, or they look like NES controllers or the Sega Genesis. And but they, you know, they make them a little bit more modern, and then you can use them with your phone or with your PC, your tablet, anything that would work over Bluetooth. Well, they've got a new version of the SN30 Pro for Xbox. So it's a version of the SN30 that looks like an Xbox controller. So if you're familiar with the 8-bit Do controllers, the SN30 Pro kind of looks like the love child of a Super Nintendo controller and a PlayStation DualShock controller. So it's absolutely got the shape of a Super Nintendo controller, but it's got two analog sticks in the middle slash bottom part of the controller, the way that PlayStation aligns their analog sticks. You still get two buttons where your index and middle finger would go, you know, a bumper and a trigger. And then, of course, the four face buttons that you would expect on an Xbox controller. But it's also got that Xbox guide button and the view and the menu button. I think that's what they're called 7 years into the generation, and I still don't know what those buttons are actually called on an Xbox controller. And then a couple of extra buttons, one that has a heart on it, one that has a star on it. And all of these can be mapped to do different things. There's Android software that comes with this controller that allows you to map all of the buttons, and it even allows you to adjust sensitivity of the analog sticks and the triggers, which is pretty amazing. It's not something I've seen on, frankly, anything outside of like the Xbox Elite controller or something from SCUF or something like that, where you're paying well over $100 for. Microsoft isn't just doing this so that they can have a Bluetooth controller that looks like an Xbox controller, especially because it kind of also looks like a PlayStation controller. They're doing this because it's going to work great for Project xCloud. That's the game streaming service that they're working on that is already available in beta form on Android and in a more limited release on iOS. So this controller is basically designed to be a smaller version of an Xbox controller that you can take with you with your phone or with your tablet to play Xbox on the go through that Project xCloud streaming service. It doesn't only work with Project xCloud, though. It's still just a Bluetooth controller. So if you're playing Call of Duty Mobile or PUBG or Fortnite or something like that on your phone, this will work for that. One of the other cool things about this is it also comes with a phone clip. So if you are buying this to play with your phone, you've already got a clip. Comes with it. It'll charge via USB-C, so it's, you know, stepped into the latest generation of charging technologies. Now, when I read through all of these notes, I thought, this is getting kind of pricey. Like, this has got to be pretty expensive for a Bluetooth controller, because we're used to seeing Bluetooth controllers ranging anywhere from like 20 to $50, maybe, for the best ones. This is going to be available for $44.99 with the game clip. That's a fantastic price. You know, if you're at all interested in Project xCloud or even Google Stadia, or you know, you can stream from Steam onto portable devices. You've got NVIDIA Now. Like, there are all sorts of options, or just straight up playing Fortnite or Call of Duty on your phone. This is going to be a great controller for doing it, especially with all of that customization with the triggers and with the analog sticks. And to have it come with the phone clip, so you've got everything you need. It's small enough to fit in your pocket or in your bag really easily. I think this is a pretty awesome little device that I might need to pre-order because it doesn't ship until September 21st. And like I said, that was for $44.99. I think it's a great price for a really great looking device. But I still just wish it had offset sticks like the Xbox controller. That's it for our news. So just real quick, jumping into the things that I have been watching or playing or reading. I already mentioned Hamilton, and like I said, we'll talk more about Hamilton next week when we've got Richard on the show. On the reading side of things, I finished up Crown of Midnight. That's the second book in the Throne of Glass series that Jen loves and recommended to me. Second book was really good, just as Jen said it would be, but she said it's book three when things get really good. So I'll probably be starting on book three this week. On the gaming side, really only played two games. This won't be surprising. Call of Duty, NHL 20. They're my favorites for a reason. You know, put in all the usual time on those games. And then I really wish Richard was here for this part. So a couple nights ago, I looked down at my phone, saw I had a charge from Google for a little over $5. What? What did I buy? Like, I didn't buy anything on Google. It must have been Jen. You know, so Jen must have bought an app or something. No. It was me. See, that introduction subscription, that free trial to Quibi expired. Yeah, it expired. Well, it doesn't really expire. It means you start paying for it. So I got charged for an extra month of Quibi. Now, of, you know, the two of us, between me and Richard, I was the one who's more interested in Quibi. But as we even talked about last week, after I had given it a try after it first launched and liked it, I still never used it. Never, ever watched anything after that first week, probably. But then I got billed for it. And I thought, you know, I was kind of digging that show called The Most Dangerous Game with Liam Hemsworth. It was kind of a cool show. I just paid for an extra month. I might as well finish the show. So last night, I think it was, that all happened. I watched 3 more episodes of Most Dangerous Game. It's an interesting show. And it's real, like, it makes me feel like Richard when I can say I watched 3 episodes of something. Well, it's also a whole lot easier when an episode on Quibi is like 10 minutes long. So I think I'm probably going to actually end up finishing it this time around before we record the next episode of this show. We'll see. I mean, there aren't that many more episodes, and it won't take that much time. And it is a good show. So if, you know, Quibi's getting a lot of hate in the media, and a lot of it's justified. You know, they launched at a really bad time. They already were starting from a spot where a lot of people didn't understand why this needed to be a thing. And then to have this basically mobile-first media service launch during a global pandemic when everyone is at home, it couldn't have gone worse for them. But if you haven't tried the free trial, maybe give it a chance. There is some good stuff on there. So I would at least recommend Most Dangerous Game if you're into cool action flicks, basically. All right, well, that's it for our news tonight. If you want to get a hold of us, you can do that in a lot of different ways. I'm at Josh Pollard. Richard, even though he's not here, he's still on Twitter. You can bother him over at Richard Gunther. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We're also on Instagram and Facebook and all of those other places. You can find all of that contact information over at our website in the show notes for this episode at www.thedigitalmediazone.com. So subscribe to the show and definitely go and check out other things going on the website over at the DMZ. You'll also want to check out Richard's other podcast. It's called Home On. If you're into smart home technology, it is the show to listen to. So go and check that out also. And then normally we do this show live Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We weren't tonight. It's harder to do when it's just me. So we should be back next week. And by next week, we're going to be on Twitch. I got to make sure that we're ready for that because Mixer is going away. So I got to get our Twitch game ready for all of this for next week. Well, that's going to do it for episode 526. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.